The next item on the agenda, I'll speak slowly so people can move back and forth, is draft advisory opinion 2019-05 from Systems 73. Mr. Engel, I see you sitting back there. Would you like to join us up here? I have a feeling that you might have comments based on the comments that you sent in to us. Ms. Fillmyer.
Thank you, Chair Weintraub, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is Agenda Document 19-18-A, a draft advisory opinion responding to a request from System 73, which is an incorporated communications technology network. The requester asks whether it may pay a political committee a license fee for the exclusive rights to live stream the committee's political event. The draft concludes that the proposal would result in prohibited corporate contributions because, one, the proposal does not meet the requirements for the media exemption because System 73 would not be acting within the scope of a legitimate media function in paying a political committee for this access, and two, the proposal is not otherwise permissible because it would result in fundraising for the committee. We did not receive any comments on the request. We received one comment on the draft from the requester. Thank you, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Engel, I know that you have comments, so we might as well start with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and it's good to be here. My inaugural
welcome.
Visit.
To the new building. Well,
yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. Well, the General Counsel's office is right that those are the two issues boiled down into two sentences that will turn whether this advisory opinion is, you know, approved or not. The first one is on page 11, and it's on lines 19 through 21. And it says, System 73 would not be acting within the scope of a legitimate media function in paying the committee for this access. And there is no citation to that sentence or for that sentence. And then the second point that the council raised was at the bottom of that page 11, line 23, up to the next page, System 73 would not only stream a committee's events, but would also pay the committee a license fee, which would be a, quote, mechanism for raising funds for the candidates. One citation to support that, and that's Milothe at page 7. So going in reverse order, I'd like to look at Milothe at page 7 and see what they were talking about there. On page 7 in Milothe, when they were talking about a mechanism for raising funds for the candidate, they said on page 7 at the bottom of that top paragraph, providing a mechanism for raising funds for a candidate is not a typical press function. So adding a contribution page or providing a permanent hyperlink to an appropriate website where viewers may make contributions would not be covered by the press exemption, meaning you cannot say you are a part of the press when you're facilitating the making of other people's contributions by providing hyperlinks or some sort of mechanism for them to donate money. So then I want to jump to the advisory opinion request that I submitted on page 4, which says, System 73 does not presently provide any fundraising functionality with its live streaming technologies. Its political committee customers will need to continue to use their own existing systems to generate contributions. Milothe may be a nice citation for that sentence, but it is not applicable here because we kind of thought about this before we submitted it. Now, I will admit that I did not spend much time in the advisory opinion request addressing the first point about whether a license fee paid in the media industry is typical in the media industry. I didn't do that because it is so obvious that that's what happens every day in the media industry that it barely was worth commenting on. I was waiting for my chance to come up here, I pulled up, you know, another 8 articles on my phone about the enormity of media and licensing fees, and that's how Netflix works, Hulu works, the NFL works, half the shows on CBS work, that the broadcasters pay third parties a license fee for their content, and then while broadcasting their content, generate advertising revenue. It happens every minute of every day on nearly every channel that you can watch. And it happens in music. It happens on Broadway. It is the way the industry works. So I do apologize for not being more diligent in my advisory opinion request about saying that license fees are the way the world works, because I thought that that was obvious. But I want to be on the record as saying license fees are the way the world works. So those are just two small comments, but I think they go to the heart of the matter, which is, are you in the media business? Can you pay a license fee? Yes. Are we planning on facilitating the making of contributions? No.
So, if I go to, I was going to name a store name, but I won't, so as not to put any commercial endorsements on the record. If I go to a store and I buy a T-shirt, you know, it's a normal commercial transaction. I'm getting a T-shirt, a thing of value, and I'm paying money for it. But if I buy a T-shirt from a campaign committee, that's a campaign contribution, even though I'm still getting a T-shirt. And maybe, and this has happened to me, I'm just buying it because I like the pattern on the T-shirt. When I was young and naive, I didn't even realize I was making a political contribution when I bought the T-shirt. So my point being that, you know, political committees, when they receive income, when they sell things, they're kind of on a different footing from other folks that provide things of value and get paid for them, because often it does result in a political contribution, even though in other settings it wouldn't. So why isn't the license fee to broadcast the campaign event a campaign contribution in the same way that buying the T-shirt at the campaign event would be a campaign contribution?
I think there are a couple of answers to that. The first one is, the individual who buys the T-shirt at a campaign event knows exactly what's going on. They're buying a T-shirt. They're making a contribution.
Well, I'm telling you, I didn't the first time. That was when I was much younger. But
we'll put something in the record.
That I was once young and very naive. Okay.
That the campaign events that I've been to also recently make you fill out a donor card when you buy a T-shirt.
And good for them.
Here you have a like-kind exchange, a quid pro quo, a corporate contribution in exchange for an equal asset coming back to that corporation, which would be the exclusive rights to be the broadband broadcaster of the event. That truly is the like-kind exchange.
Still not entirely getting why it's not like the T-shirt.
Well, a T-shirt is a political contribution. Buying a ticket at an event, that's a political contribution. You are an individual, and you are wanting to support that candidate. System 73 doesn't care.
So does it go by intent?
doesn't care who the candidate is. They don't care. They want to do it for all the candidates. That's why this is so exciting for them to be able to have 22 or 23 presidential channels that everybody can sign up and get a System 73 channel for their presidential campaign.
Commissioner Under.
I'm just curious. I didn't really think about this until we started talking about the T-shirts. And I know what the rules are. If you buy a T-shirt, it's considered a campaign contribution. But I remember when the RNC, I was at the RNC when we first started talking about this, and the RNC decided not to sell T-shirts because they didn't want to deal with all that. But does anybody remember if there is an opinion from here on point saying that the purchase of the T-shirt is completely a contribution? Because I have a vague recollection that it might just be the profit. That, you know, why is it the full price of the T-shirt and not just any profit that there might be? Profit would be a contribution and not just whatever the T-shirt cost.
I don't think that's the way it works. I could understand an argument that that's the way it should work.
Well, I know that's not the way it works, but that's in part because that's what people just decided to do.
I do think there's authority for that. I'll look at it while you all continue
okay.
to discuss.
Thank you. And I want to know if they got into that fine point about, you know, at the outset of this conversation, which was a while ago, but, you know, I guess it was after BICRA.
Well, it probably goes, you know, they've been selling T-shirts for a long time, so I
suspect it wasn't an issue until after BICRA, because the RNC could
why not?
Take, I don't remember right now.
I can guarantee you the T-shirt that I bought when I was young and naive was pre-BICRA because, yeah. You know, I wasn't that young when BICRA passed. Council, do you have something for us?
Yes. So it's in 11 CFR 100.53, and it says the entire amount paid to attend a fundraiser or other political event and the entire amount paid as the purchase price for a fundraising item sold by a political committee is a contribution. And that's regulation is cited.
Who wrote that reg?
That's an old one, I think.
That's fine with me because it talks about fundraising items. Anyway, that's not what we're dealing with here.
Commissioner Peterson, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I congratulate you on coming up in conjunction with your client with a very innovative approach and one that has caused me to do a lot of deep thinking on this issue. I can't say that I've, because of the unusual nature of the request, and as I think you pointed out, this is an innovative proposal that you've put together. The rule of thumb that I've always understood, and correct me if my understanding, and to the extent that I'm oversimplifying it, is that you make a payment to a political committee, that payment is going to be considered a contribution with certain exceptions. So the example of the hats, the books, the T-shirts, those the payment to get into an event, maybe the event has entertainment, but still, even though there might be a fair market value, the amount that you're paying to that political committee is considered a contribution. There are some exceptions to that general rule of thumb regarding mailing lists, regarding sale of committee assets when the committee is maybe going, you know, is disbanding and getting rid of computers and old office equipment and so forth. Is that an oversimplification of the rule of thumb?
Yes.
And walk me through why that, why there is more room for a political committee to receive a payment of this sort without that being considered a contribution.
First of all, it starts with the reason that we're all here, which is to prevent corruption or the appearance of corruption. That's the whole reason we have the artifice that we have. And if you ask yourself, what kind of corruption am I promoting by prohibiting System 73, you're not going to get a good answer because there is no corrupting element to a corporation that wants to be in the political media business if it does it on an even-handed basis and consistent as a legitimate media function. So the lack of any corrupting influence here is where I start in looking at transactions between entities and political committees. The second thing is, I think it's time for us to recognize that the content of political speech and candidates' time and appearances have value. They don't have to give it away anymore. The traditional media has made a fortune off of requiring candidates to give them their time, to give them access to their speeches, and sometimes even change the time and location of speeches in order for them to get their camera crews there. Well, that imbalance is just that, an imbalance, that a terrific speech by a candidate has value. We know that because people watch it and people cover it as news. And in order to be the exclusive taker of that value for broadband purposes, you should be required to give them something in exchange for that. When you look at, here's an example. Let's say I represent a man who has ran for the Senate and been elected two or three times. And the History Channel comes to our office and says, we would like footage of his campaign appearances because we're putting together a documentary thing. And we want to see him in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And that you have footage that you can give us. And as the campaign's lawyer, I say, yeah, we do have footage. Here it is. Now give me a license agreement. Tell me how much you're going to pay me for this footage and what you're going to do with it. Because I'm not going to give it over for free, and I'm not going to give it over for strings attached. Now, I do not think anybody in this room would say that the History Channel can't have a transaction with a campaign committee if it's putting together a documentary and looking for campaign footage. But I also don't think anybody in this room would think that the History Channel could get away with that for free. That's not the way it works. That is not the way the creation of third-party content on television works. It works through license agreements for the use of creative content, which is then recouped by the sale of advertising. This is no different than the NFL. This is no different than something on Netflix. It is a broadcaster looking around for opportunities to purchase things and get an exclusive right to then rebroadcast them for a profit.
I'm not sure. Could I ask you a question about this business model? Because I'm not sure I understand how this is going to work. You're talking about an exclusive license fee. Are you suggesting that candidates would then ban every other media entity from covering their rallies or events because they have this exclusive Mm-mm. arrangement with System 73?
No. Mm-mm. Exclusive broadband provider. If, you know, CNN and NBC and others want to set up their cameras and put it on their channels, that's great. But we're talking about being the exclusive broadband licensee for your presidential channel on System 73. And the other thing that System 73 provides that the other cameras aren't going to provide is interactivity. because what we have done is we have created the best of the internet and the best of cable. You get uninterrupted, high-quality broadband broadcasting, just like you're watching, you know, a television show, with the functionality of the internet, where you can be watching and then hit prompts on your screen to say, I like that sentence, I didn't like that sentence, I'm hot, I'm cold. So it allows the audience to interact. And what does it also do? It gives the candidates more exposure to their supporters and maybe even to the undecided. I mean, the number one thing that I've heard from the candidates that I've spoken to is that we don't get enough coverage. The media is too favorite. We get clipped and edited. If I could only just get through, I'm sure I would get more support. Well, this is how you get through. You get through as a candidate by using what the rest of the industry and the rest of the world is doing, which is licensing your content through an exclusive broadband channel.
CBS covers it and they, you know, have it on CBS.com?
Yeah, if CBS has it on CBS.com, that's fine. If CBS was there and had their camera, God bless them.
So how is it exclusive then?
We're talking about a broadband channel for, you know, Walther for President. That's CBS. Hey, you know.
It could happen.
It's happened.
My vote.
That's not on Walther for President channel. That's on CBS. And that's where all the noise is. And the other thing about it is on CBS, their live stream and their broadband and certainly their network is not unlimited. Things roll off your, you know, like with Netflix, for example, you have to hurry up and finish watching a show because you heard that at the end of the week they're going to be taking such and such off of Netflix. Why is that? Is that because Netflix has got only so big? No, they're pretty big. It's because the license expired.
But what you're describing, when you talk about how the candidates say, oh, if only I could get access to, you know, broadband so my full message could come through, now you're really convincing me that the candidates are really getting something of value, that the, you know, it's not that the candidates should be paid for this. It's almost, it seems more appropriate that they would be paying for this, that they want this exposure. It's not as if the candidates are saying, oh, you know, we have too many cameras following us around. They want all the cameras, mm-hmm. all the time, all the publicity that they can possibly get. And it just seems counterfactual to suggest that they need to be paid in order to have their content made more available.
No, that's really not it. I can't write a contract with a candidate to say, you give me exclusive rights to your speeches and I give you nothing. A contract has to have two equal exchanges to it. And if you sign up with us, you can buy from us a lot of the interactivity functions that I talked about so that you can know who is watching, whether they were hot or not, or what they didn't like. The functionalities that are going to be available here on the Walther for President presidential channel are going to be great. You're going to be getting a lot of data back.
Which is why Walther for President should pay for it.
Well, they are paying for it. Remember, they are paying for the functionality charges. In the advisory opinion, I said there is a second set of services that we can provide, and they have to pay for those.
But even being on the channel from the get-go sounds like something that's would be extremely valuable to candidates.
Well, we hope so. But that doesn't mean that they have to give it away just because it's extremely valuable. I mean, look, being on a CNN town hall, for example, it's one of the biggest complaints that some of the younger candidates or lesser candidates say, that we're not getting on.
Careful there, some of those younger candidates are pretty hot.
Yeah. And the inequality that is attributed to some people by who CNN allows access to or not is exactly what I'm trying to prevent. Everybody gets a shot. Everybody gets a shot at having their own channel and having a chance at all of the interactive functions that having your own channel has. And we do it just like everybody else in the industry is doing it, through license agreements.
Commissioner Hunter.
I think maybe this helps. So candidate Y, who's sort of what you called a lesser, I can't remember what the word is.
Younger.
Younger, lesser known, whatever. There's 23 candidates now on the Democrat side. So candidate, one of the lesser known candidates, they might get a little clip on CNN, but they're not getting their entire speech run. And you said, well, why can't CBS go video them? They can, but they don't, because nobody wants to watch the entire speech of somebody who's a, you know, not so popular candidate. So Craig's not preventing CBS by showing up and videoing their entire speech at the fish fry in Iowa. But again, they're not showing up because the guy doesn't, it's not bringing enough revenue for them to send the camera, set up, and do all this kind of stuff. So the service they're providing films that guy's entire speech and then pays him for the use of being able to stream it, and then he can then buy back services to allow his viewers, his supporters, or undecideds to watch him give the full speech. Because if they don't have that service, either there's a little teeny snippet or nobody shows up at all.
Well, you could put it on YouTube. You could put the entire speech on YouTube.
But it's going to be like somebody with their phone, you know, videoing the speech on YouTube. They don't have the ability to provide a good video service that can then be streamed out. It's going to be sort of, you know, man on the street kind of video. Yeah, I mean, campaigns can't do what they're going to do, or else they would do it themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can't. Again, the level of production he's offering, and so going back to what we were talking about earlier, I think I am kind of glad that I brought up the reg that you said. Thank you, because you're right, Craig. It says, or Mr. Engel. It does say
we're all friends here.
Yeah. Okay. The entire amount paid to attend a fundraiser or other political event, and the entire amount paid as the purchase price for a fundraising item sold by a political committee is a contribution. So back to what you were saying earlier, if you're trying to sell a fundraising item, then you have to pay for it, and that's in line with what you just talked about with the Maloth opinion. They were trying to raise money. In this case, they're trying to get their message out and put their entire speech or whatever out into the public domain. And it's a little bit more akin to the sale of a mailing list, which we talked about yesterday. It's kind of a service almost. It's something. It's an asset that they have, which is themselves. And so they're having a sort of, as you said, a bargain for exchange with the company. And they're both winning. I mean, just because they're both winning doesn't mean it's not okay. The candidate wants to get his message and his voice out there. But as Craig said, it's impossible for somebody to say, oh, yeah, I'll come video you and make it available, you know, for free. It doesn't work that way. So this is a creative way for both sides to win. But they're providing the company with something, which is their speech and their themselves in the same way that they would in a mailing list.
Still seems like the candidate is getting something of great value and would pay for this and perhaps should pay for it, but I'm not seeing why they get paid for it. And it's not, you know, like selling the T-shirts, which, yeah, they do it to make money, but in fact, they mostly do it because they want a lot of people to be wearing their T-shirts and to be walking around advertising that they support that candidate.
I think that the reason that the candidates should be paid for this is because they are giving up something. They are giving up something to us, the right to be the exclusive broadband broadcaster of all of their campaign events.
But you said that they don't have that anywhere else anyway. So are they really giving something up? Who else is asking for that?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
If there were a bunch of folks with services like yours that were competing to be the exclusive venues for the candidates' speeches and whatever, then, I mean, honestly, I don't know why a candidate would want to give exclusive. They want their name in as many places and their photo in as many places as possible. It still seems to me that what you are providing is of such value to the candidates that they don't need to be paid. They are getting more than they're giving.
I couldn't disagree with that more, that they are getting something that they should be grateful for and shouldn't be paid for, getting more than it's worth. That's not a statement that I can agree with, because the marketplace for political content is changing. And I think that we have to recognize that a candidate's appearance, his time, his speeches have value. And if a candidate committee wants to give a promoted place to someone for access to that value, then there has to be some kind of quid pro quo exchange. I don't understand why the campaigns have to be the losers here.
They're not the losers. They're getting the publicity, which is the thing that they most want.
They are getting the publicity because they've signed an agreement with us for us to give them the publicity and them to get interactive functionality from it.
Are we then going to have candidates selling their time to give speeches to corporate audiences? And I'm sure there are, you know, plenty of corporate audiences who would be happy to pay for that.
I think that's a completely separate thing. A speaking fee for a candidate to a corporate audience, I think that's completely different. It's not at all what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about a media company, not a corporate audience. I'm talking about a campaign, not a candidate. I'm talking about a political event, not a speaking fee. Nothing at all to do with this.
I understand you say that, you know, these things are entirely different. I'm not sure they are.
A candidate giving a private speech to a corporation for money versus this, what I'm doing, I think there are differences. I think there are a lot of differences. I think some private corporate audience is not a media company. I think going to a campaign rally is not asking a candidate to give a speech. Paying a candidate to give a speech is not the same thing as having an offset to an operating expenditure, which is essentially what this is. That's essentially what this is. It's not a contribution. It's an offset to an operating expenditure where a campaign is going to put on an event and is going to have to pay $58,000 in a build-out for an arena, and they recouped like 4,000 of it through a license fee through an exclusive provider. Remember, the campaigns don't run for free. They're creating
operating expenses. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, these campaigns have operating expenditures. And that's what this really is. It's an offset to an operating expenditure. To the extent that it's a net plus contribution received, that's just not possible. It's not possible that this is an excellent way for expenses to be defrayed.
It just sounds like a contribution to me, the way you're describing it. Exactly what you're saying is exactly what is persuading me.
Let me finish my sentence, please.
If the candidate is getting subsidies for their operating expenses, that sounds like a contribution.
Contribution is a thing of value for the purpose of influencing an election. And this company is not in the business of influencing any election. It has no intent to influence an election. Its purpose is not to influence an election. That's what a contribution is. A thing of value given for the purpose of influencing an election. And there are some limits put on it for the purpose of preventing corruption, and there are some prohibitions for the purpose of preventing corruption. We're not even in the thing of value for purposes of influencing election, let alone bumping up against a limit or a prohibition. We are, like many of the advisory opinions I cited, a business that wants to have political clients. And over the last 25 or 30 years, the commission has just routinely checked, yes, 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 if you're a business and you're doing it in an even-handed sort of way and you're motivated by profit, not by influencing the outcome of an election, you're fine. And just because we're the first ones to come up with this doesn't make it wrong.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to pick up on a point that that Commissioner Hunter was going down and just also revisit the question I'd asked you earlier about kind of the rule of thumb. And the way I understand it is that rule of thumb, as I presented it, was overly broad, not particularly precise. And according to what you had said, that payment to a political committee will be considered a contribution if that payment is for a fundraising purpose, a fundraising item, again, hat, shirts, books, what have you. And then in this particular case, this is not a payment for a fundraising item. I could see the argument being raised that there, on the one hand, I think that in your comment you said that this is not, I think that you had expressed some exasperation with the notion that committees would try to goose up the number of events they're going to have in order to boost the potential license fees that they could receive and therefore fatten their bank accounts, that would kind of fly in the face of political reality and probably fly in the face of how much these license fees would actually, you know, pad the coffers of the political committee. But it does seem like there does need to be some line drawn between when is a payment to a political committee, when is that deemed a fundraising payment, and when should we where should the line be in terms of when we consider a payment to a political committee to not be? I know that you've talked about like-kind of exchange and so forth. Maybe help me with that concept of how that line should be drawn between fundraising and non-fundraising in terms of payments made to political committees.
I think that you can look at it as a fundraising receipt, like at the top of your FEC page, a contribution, versus an other receipt or an offset to an operating expense. The contribution is pretty easy because we deal with those all the time. It's people who want to support someone and they give them money so they can then go on and campaign. That's the motivation for the purpose of influencing an election. I want you to win, so here's $1,000, or I'm going to buy 5 T-shirts. That's a contribution. Offsets to operating expenditures or other receipts are further down the page, on the detailed summary page, and they're designed to show that there are places where political committees can receive income that don't count as contributions. And in your reporting books, you talk in there about what are other receipts? What are offsets to operating expenditures? And pretty much they're all commercial-oriented transactions, the tail end of them showing up on your report. They're not refunds, but they are money that you have been given or netted against an expense that you've incurred. Perfect example is the airline seat. That if you're a campaign with a plane and the media wants to climb on board, you can charge them the first class seat or whatever the number might be. Now, that is a check that is being written by CBS right to Beto for president for the purpose of having their reporter on that plane so he can watch Beto and film him and maybe get an interview and go to the next event. You'd think Beto's campaign would want that for free, that kind of exposure. Sure, come on my plane. I need all the reporters that I can get on my plane. But no, the commission says you can charge for access. The first class airfare. So you can be close to the candidate and film them and get a chance at an interview and get in the front row of the next event. That's the difference between a contribution and an other receipt or an offset to an operating expenditure.
Didn't have my mic on. Any other comments, questions? Commissioner Walther?
Well, I'm still working through some of the thought process, but to me, I always come back to the issue of thing of value. What's the thing of value? This is what we're bound by. Is it a gift? Is it not a gift? What's the value? And how do you determine what the value is? And in this process, I was trying to think about how you figure out what a thing of value is or isn't and what factors you take into consideration. So I was interested to hear what you have to say, but if it's like a regular business transaction, and like you say, it's the things of value are equal, then you can figure out whether it's a campaign contribution or whether it isn't. So that's what I think is a hard thing to do in all of this, is to try and figure out how to measure the so-called thing of value.
Commissioner, that is something that I struggled with as well when we were working on this several months ago, because my fear was this, that I was going to be here talking about this. Mr. Engel, how can you make sure that license fee isn't too high? We understand that you're going to give a license fee, and we understand that you're going to make advertising revenue from it, from the broadcast of it, and we understand that you might get some money for the functionality of it, and we understand that it'll drive the candidate support. We understand all of that is going to happen. But how can you make sure that you aren't overpaying? That's what I was most concerned about.
And that's the issue that I raised myself.
And the answer to that is this. We're going to have some of the best licensing algorithms available and licensing attorneys available to start this off, because we can't overpay. And I'll make a prediction that the license fees that are going to be paid under our proposal initially are going to be kind of low, because the market has not yet matured or become well known as to what the commercial revenue can be on a broadband channel for a candidate during or around his speeches. But we'll get there. But in talking with my clients, I said, you're going to have to turn the dial to low because I said, this is permitted because it's a like-kind exchange. Just make sure that you err on the downside. And fortunately, because of the license industry being as pervasive as it is, we'll be able to have some access to some good talent that'll be able to help us, both computer talent and people talent. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I thought I was going to be talking about was separating the advertising revenue from the license fee to the candidates. But that appears not to be a problem because of the way in which we have structured this to not be like an affinity card relationship or any other thing where you get a percentage of the revenue if you sign up to my program. So that is one of the questions that, you know, I think we solved going in here. The question that I didn't think I was going to have to face is that the notion of license fees being not a typical media function. This, we all watched a licensed program last night before we went to bed, I'm sure, whatever that might be. And secondly, your precedent on fundraising, cited right here, Malothe, is do not let third parties take advantage of a media platform for raising funds to a candidate. That's your precedent. And that's exactly what I said I wasn't going to do. I said I was not going to do what you prohibited in Malothe, and I said I was going to do what's common in the industry. And you have many advisory opinions which say if you stay within the industry norms and practices, you're going to be fine. Don't weave out of the ordinary course of business. I'm in the ordinary course of business, and I'm not fundraising. I am honestly not sure what more I can do to make this as clear as I can that this is a commercial exchange by a media company, which happens many times every day, especially in politics.
Commissioner Walter?
I guess one of the things that come to mind is when you try and figure it out, and I'm truly a novice in how money's approached on these transactions, but you have to look at, as I think we have an obligation to, how could it go wrong? Mm-hmm. How could it go off in some direction we didn't anticipate? And so I looked at or thought about, you know, the various broadcasting companies that we see, and the divergence of opinion over what they want to broadcast and how much it's going to cost and that type of thing. And then how can we craft something here that wouldn't, that could deal with that? Mm-hmm. And so that's, I'm just giving you, as you know, kind of what's on my mind when I take a look at
sure.
the proposal.
I think that if I heard you correctly, you're saying how can we make sure that there's no bias in the execution of this system 73.
Bias is a good example, and so I would say yeah, we could start with that. There's other things as well, mm-hmm. other indicia of gratitude.
Well, I know that I said a couple of times in System 73's advisory opinion request that we would like every candidate to be our client. So there's not a whole lot of bias there.
Right.
And in your advisory opinion, voter, which is cited in here, you made a big point of saying you're motivated by commercial profit, aren't you? Voter said yes. You said approved. that we are motivated for the same reasons that voter-voter was motivated that you cited in your in the council's draft, is that you're a for-profit corporation wanting to have political committees as clients and customers. And there is no Republican System 73. There is no Democratic System 73. There's just one. And it holds all the patents on this broadband internet connectivity blend. But I am mindful, and I will be mindful in supervising the client from here on, that don't overpay and make sure that your payments are in sync with each other. And remember, payments come not necessarily from the discretion of System 73, but from the advertising revenue that is placed on those and around those speeches. And those advertisers are going to ask System 73 the same thing they ask CBS when they are approached to put an ad on the Super Bowl. How many eyeballs do you have? And the number of eyeballs is going to be the determiner largely of the advertising revenue we're going to be able to get bidded out of, you know, Kellogg's or whomever wants to be on these screens. And also, the political committees, it is in their interest to drive their people to the System 73 channel, because the more open screens there are that we can show an advertiser, the higher we'll be able to charge that advertiser, because we'll say candidate X has a lot of people watching. Here's what our analytics show his viewership was of the last, you know, appearance. And why was that so high? Because candidate X went about shoving people and telling people, go watch me at 9:30 on System 73, pushing his people toward that. So there are safeguards and fail-safes built into this, because I know the sensitivity of the commission. You know, I've worked here. I get it.
Right.
But I also know that there is not a boogeyman behind every advisory opinion.
That's the quote of the day.
Sometimes they're just advisory opinions.
That's great.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any further questions. I really appreciate you going through this extensively and explaining this model. It's one thing to read it
right on
a page, but to actually interact and get a much more clear understanding of what the business model is and what you envision and how this fits within the system of precedence that we have in Commission AOs. I personally could see a path forward for approving this. I'm still working through some things myself. I don't have a draft, but I think that just in reading through your proposal, your comments, and studying some of these issues out myself, but also as a result of this exchange, I might be able to get there. However, I would look to my colleagues, knowing that we all swim or sink together. I also don't want to create false hope or waste anyone's time if that would be a fruitless venture. So I just want to look to my colleagues to see whether or not that's worthwhile pursuing, creating an alternative draft and seeing what that looks like. If it's not, then, we could reach some sort of resolution today, but I just want to see what is the preference of my colleagues.
Well, I'm certainly open to looking at a way forward if it's possible. And I really got a lot out of our conversations.
Thank you.
And not just you and me, but the whole conversation has been great.
I don't know. Okay. I'm not there yet. But I'm happy to consider another draft.
Okay.
And tell me what you want me to do.
If we have further follow-ups or further factual issues or questions that we might have, we can certainly convey those to you.
Sure.
But certainly appreciate you going well beyond the mark for answering our questions and giving us a much clearer understanding of what it is that this company would like to accomplish. It's been extremely helpful.
I'm happy to do it. It is. I had a lot of learning to do myself before I could speak.
Well, it's much appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. It's always a pleasure to see
Thank you. Same with you, Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Stefanik.
We do have a deadline.
A deadline,
May 20th, and the next open meeting is on May 23rd. So if the Commission wishes to consider this at a next open meeting, we would need an extension from Council.
Granted.
Well, that was easy. If only it were always that easy. Thank you, Mr.
Craig.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. Okay, well, that was interesting. Bye-bye.